Picture the Rose Arden in May 2010. Two young leaders, sleeves rolled up, promising a new kind of politics. Fast forward 5 years, and one of them stands at the cenotaph, watching his party collapse from 57 seats to just 8. What happens in between? Not the sanitized version you see on the news, but the real machinery of power. The late-night cigarettes on the terrace, the budget vetoes days before announcement, the fights over banker bonuses that never make headlines. This is the story of what governing actually costs, told by someone who paid the price. It's about discovering that influence without symbols looks like weakness, that compromise reads as betrayal, and that the gap between wielding power and appearing power can destroy a political party. Through one politician's journey from hero to scapegoat, we glimpse something larger: how democracies are fracturing along new fault lines, and why the center cannot hold when voters crave certainty over nuance. Westminster operates like an elite boarding school designed by Lewis Carroll. MPs cannot shake hands or clap. Instead, they slap their thighs and wave papers. Until 2010, Parliament maintained a rifle range, but no childcare facility. 8 subsidized bars, but inadequate women's bathrooms. The Commons Chamber was deliberately rebuilt, too small for what Churchill called a sense of crowd and urgency. During speeches by female MPs, male colleagues have been documented pretending to juggle imaginary breasts. 1/3 of MPs attended private schools, 1/4 studied at Oxbridge, and barely 1 in 4 parliamentarians is a woman. Every MP lives split between two worlds, voting in Parliament until midnight Monday through Thursday, then racing to constituencies for Friday surgeries and weekend campaigning. Ministers add departmental duties, working 80, 90-hour weeks. The toll is devastating: persistent bronchitis, pneumonia, chest pains, broken toes from rushing between meetings. High-definition cameras capture every micro-expression for public analysis. The media has shifted from reporting events to actively shaping them. Twitter arguments rage and subside within minutes. Policy announcements flare and bomb within hours. Long-term thinking becomes impossible when constantly firefighting media crises. Politicians must now display perfect domestic tableaus: children paraded before cameras, innocence sacrificed for polling points. Refusing this performance costs votes. Complying costs something far more precious. Unprecedented transparency has paradoxically made power more opaque. Real decisions happened in bilats, direct meetings between two leaders, or quads with 4 participants. These frank forums handled the toughest economic choices, yet public perception credited only the most visible figures. During 2012 budget negotiations, the deputy PM vetoed the entire budget days before announcement over tax rate cuts. Despite achieving the largest ever rise in income tax personal allowance, this victory drowned beneath the pasty tax fiasco. In 2014, intense pressure mounted to approve excessive RBS bonuses worth twice staff salaries. A detailed letter refused approval, yet when the Financial Times reported it, the chancellor received all credit. The tragedy was invisibility. This mismatch between power's optics and mechanics allowed contradictory narratives. To the left, a sellout sitting meekly while conservatives ran amok. To the right, a villain frustrating Thatcherite dreams. Both couldn't be true, yet both stuck because actual influence remained hidden behind closed doors where cameras never reached. Change requires overcoming institutional inertia, financial constraints, and political opposition, mobilizing public opinion, persuading colleagues, and assembling majorities. As junior coalition partners with no governing experience, we learned that perfect is the enemy of good. We navigated change-resistant systems through policy swaps, trading support for one initiative to gain backing for another, and forensic haggling over spending and timelines. Disagreements sometimes created gridlock, especially on electoral reform and House of Lords restructuring. Yet, compromise forced more thoughtful approaches, with extreme policies rarely surviving. Universal free school meals for infants exemplifies this dynamic. Initially dismissed as unaffordable, we secured it in the coalition agreement. Treated as a Lib Dem ask requiring concessions elsewhere, conservatives eventually embraced it so thoroughly they made it their major 2015 tax pledge. Contested policies could become consensus positions through successful implementation, though original champions received little credit. Britain remains dominated by powerful interests in business, media, and politics. Breaking up these concentrations sits at liberalism's core, but attempting it is political suicide. The 2015 election produced the most distorted result yet. Conservatives won a majority with just 37% of votes, while SNP took 56 of Scotland's 59 seats with fewer votes than Liberal Democrats, who won just 8 seats. UKIP received 3.9 million votes but won MP. First past the post was designed for a two-party era when Labour and Conservatives captured 97% of votes, not today's multi-party landscape where they receive only 67%. The system favors geographically concentrated support and forces tactical voting. Meanwhile, the House of Lords, with over 800 unelected peers, stands as the world's second largest parliamentary chamber after China's National People's Congress. Big money has hollowed out British politics. Conservatives received over 15 million in donations, compared to Liberal Democrats' 3 million in early 2015, allowing sophisticated targeting of marginal seats. When the coalition took office, genuine appetite existed for reform following the expenses scandal. A comprehensive package was negotiated, changing the voting system, democratizing the Lords, introducing fixed-term parliaments, reforming party funding, creating recall powers. But once the spending review was announced, economic concerns took precedence. Public appetite for reform waned, giving establishment parties cover to retreat from change they'd never truly wanted. The public demands politicians work together, yet when coalitions form, cooperation turns toxic. Smaller partners become punchbags across democracies. The Dutch call this Burgemeester in Orlo, being a mayor during wartime. Under Nazi occupation, Dutch mayors could resign and be replaced by a stooge, or stay and become compromised. Neither choice won votes. Every junior partner compromise was decried as betrayal, while senior partner concessions faced no criticism. Conservatives dropped numerous manifesto commitments on welfare, tax, environment, and Europe with impunity. Yet when the Prime Minister compromised, it was portrayed as restraint on conservative vigor rather than weakness, the charge invariably leveled at the junior partner. The right-wing press's frustration was understandable. Coalition government anchored policies in the center, preventing a rightward pull. When the Daily Mail quoted Cameron saying, "I'd govern like a true Tory if it wasn't for the Lib Dems," activists wore it as a badge of honor. Sadly, Britain's progressive forces failed to recognize what was being attempted, restraining conservatives, enacting liberal policies, and stabilizing the economy. Instead, compromises were treated as unforgivable betrayals. Left-leaning newspapers proved as vitriolic as right-wing ones. Labour prioritized attacking Lib Dems over targeting conservatives. The lesson was clear. In Britain's adversarial political culture, the center cannot hold because both extremes need an enemy more than they need solutions. Liberalism faces its greatest test as extremism surges. The 2016 Brexit referendum exposed this crisis. Stilted campaign messages about trade statistics couldn't compete with powerful emotional appeals about sovereignty and identity. Heart won over head, partly because Britain never fully committed to European cooperation, treating the EU as transactional rather than transformational. Both left and right populism now share contempt for the establishment, fueled by legitimate scandals but also unconstrained cynicism. Three critical challenges demand attention: economic stagnation, inequality driving instability, and creating shared belonging in diverse societies. Post-2008 growth has been anemic. Younger people face falling incomes and precarious employment, while pensioners grow wealthier, dividing generations. Though Brexit has made liberalism's reassertion harder, the coalition experience offers hope, demonstrating that stable, center-ground government is possible even in unfavorable conditions. political fragmentation will continue, making single-party governments with slender mandates increasingly untenable. The path forward isn't retreat into tribal certainties, but recommitment to reason over populism, moderation over grievance, and compromise over factionalism. Democracy requires leaders willing to stand in the radical center, even when it feels like the loneliest place in politics.